Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Dr. Lana Love.
This is Detective David Love.
Great to have you on our show.
We're broadcasting live from the land down under on the BBS Radio Network today. Our special guest is Ellie Snow. She's the founder of an organization called Game Over, which fights sex trafficking around the world. Ellie has been seen on, or her story's been printed on CNN, and we've also seen her on some Australian news websites, and that's how we found Ellie, and we're very excited to have her on our show today to talk about the plight of sex trafficking around the world and what we can do about that.
Welcome, Ellie.
Welcome to our show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Just one little side note, it's actually pronounced L, but a lot of people go with Ellie. But just for the future, just like the letter L.
Okay.
L, okay.
Okay.
Can you guys hear me all right?
Yep, we can.
We can. So we call you Elle?
Yes. Short okay. For
Elle. Yeah. Okay. So Elle, it's such an honor to have you on our show. What you're doing is amazing, and it's quite confronting, and it's I guess quite possibly unsafe. You're actually doing something which is incredibly difficult and very courageous. And we want to thank you for that. How long have you had this?
Have my organization?
Yeah.
Well, we basically finally got our nonprofit status in the end of 2016. But I kind of started the process after I testified at trial in the end of 2014.
Can you tell us a bit about the statistics around sex trafficking?
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much out there at this point, but some of them are, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children says that they estimate that 1 in 5 runaways last year were likely sex trafficking victims, so that's pretty scary. There's a study that was just done by the University of Austin, actually, and they state that they believe that there are 79,000 minors in Texas alone being sex trafficked.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, yes. And that's actually...
Is it mainly girls, or what percentage would be boys?
Well, when we look at the... If you want to look at the sex trafficking statistics from the National Center for... the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, they're the ones who deal with all these calls, and so they report on their cases each year, and they finally just came out with these wonderful, I mean, horrific, but still great to have these statistics from 2016. So you can just Google National Human Trafficking Resource Center statistics, and they'll pop up. You can also get them on Polaris Project, which is like one of the top or the top leading organization combating human trafficking worldwide. And what we saw was 73% of sex trafficking last year was actually sex trafficking. So not only it was only about, you know, 14% of labor trafficking, and the rest was actually sex trafficking. And then we find that the vast majority of those victims that are identified are females. But again, we have to start thinking about how culture plays into this. A lot of people still don't believe that a male could be a victim of any sort of sexual abuse. And there's a lot of stigma surrounding the subject. So, I mean, if you really want to start getting into the different types of trafficking, you're going to find a whole heck of a lot more male victims. They're just not being reported near as often. In fact, in America, we just had our first house for sexually exploited males created. The first one in history, and they just started. So shows you how much of a lack of resources there is. But yeah, there's some pretty, you know, extremely alarming statistics out there, but I would suggest statistics that you follow. Definitely go to National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, Polaris Project. These are really credible resources. There's a lot of inaccurate statistics out there right now. So I would just definitely look at what you're looking at and do some research into it.
My first book was called Abducted Dreams, What to Do When Your Child is Missing. And I had quite a few, I did a lot of research for this book. And, you know, at the time, this was I don't remember when the book came out. It was many years ago. But, you know, I looked into the statistics, and I think it said there were 800,000 missing children. And these are the FBI index crime statistics. Well, not index crime, sorry. But anyhow, the federal statistics, and it said that at the time, I think it was only a little over 100 sensational abductions, you know, stranger abductions, where a little boy or girl is taken from the mall and disappears and you never see them again, etc. And then there were, you know, 400,000, I don't know, it was broken down into what they call throwaway children. I don't really like that term, which are teenage children who are kicked out of their home and live on the streets. And then there were a lot of parental abductions, which I dealt a lot with, and a lot of hundreds of thousands of runaways. But it was interesting because I never really addressed the issue of sex trafficking. And I remember I was a guest. I had done a lot of guest interviews on local AM radio shows. And I remember a woman asked me about sex trafficking and if I thought that was big in America. And I was very embarrassed that I had said, no, I don't think so. You know, being a private investigator and having worked in the business for such a long time, I'm embarrassed to have said that. And when I actually looked into it, and it wasn't even a part of my book, and I had never really had any experience in it. So I came to the realization, boy, was I wrong. And I became quite passionate on this, in this area, and realized the enormity of it on a global scale, and even in the United States, how huge it is and how terrible it is. Never mind the statistics, because I've had 50% of my work, most of our listeners know that I did a lot of criminal defense investigation, and I actually ran into a lot of sex trafficking cases where I was working for the defense attorney, and I was appalled at some of the outcome of these cases. And I think I've said enough for myself on this already.
Yeah, it's quite horrific, and I must say, I guess initially I had thought that this sort of thing happens more in third world countries. Mm. I guess I didn't realize the extent of it. And it's very frightening, and it concerns me so much. I work with children and adolescents, mm. and so many, I guess, victims that might run away, you know, have problems at home and have depression and have all sorts of problems, and they just fall victim mm. to such a dreadful, disease, if you like. Mm. Ellie, Elle, can you tell us a bit about the work that you do in trying to counter this?
I'm going to touch on a couple of points that y'all just brought up that are really, really great and really important. A lot of people do believe it's third world countries only. Mm. In fact, I train advanced officers. I trained almost all of them in my area, my whole county. And that's my area of interest, actually, is law enforcement. I wanted to be a lawyer growing up and involved in law enforcement. And I train these great officers to come in and sit down, and I start telling them about my experience, and they are absolutely blown away. And I've worked mm-hmm. with officers that work on the worst track, is where victims are trafficked off of when it's street-type trafficking. It's called the track. And I've worked with officers that were in Oakland, which is one of the hardest tracks in the nation. They were in Oakland for 20 years, and they were working with these trafficking victims, and they sit through my four-hour class, and they leave absolutely dumbfounded, and they're coming up and they are shaking my hand and they are so apologetic that they didn't realize that this is actually what they've been dealing with for all these years. And they're a bit angry with themselves a lot. I'm sure you can relate to that, David. There's a lot of I hear a lot of I should have connected the dots, I should have known. How could I not have known that this was happening? But the reality is that the world of trafficking is a lot of brainwashing. And us as a society, we're brainwashed to believe that women that are out there doing this, or they're on their own accord, they're materialistic, they're super sexually active, or they're addicted to drugs. And no one's stepped back and really looked at what this is. So we can't really, you know, it's more about getting educated. And now that we do know, what can we do? You know what I mean? So I'm really glad to hear that you went ahead with that. And the majority of officers that I come in contact with are in the same boat. And so, again, we go back to the statistics. How can we have accurate statistics if our law enforcement agencies aren't even aware of the problem? You know what I mean? It's a completely underground world. So those are something that's why there's only a few and far in between that are there. Those aren't even painting an accurate picture because it's so much more widespread. It's so much a part of our world. It's this whole other world that's functioning right next to us. So just wanted to say those couple of things.
I think what you're doing is amazing. Mm. It's a very controversial, very difficult area. It's not an area that most people think about. It's fraught with difficulties, and you're doing this. I think you're a real heroine. Thank you.
Yeah, I certainly know a lot about this area as well. I've had my experiences, but I'd love to hear about your experiences. Maybe you can just tell us about a little bit about your background and the organization and anything you want to start out with.
Sure. I run my anti-sex trafficking organization, Game Over. It's actually a nonprofit at this point, and we provide training, education, mostly, both through training people like community members, law enforcement is my special interest, social workers, foster parents is a big one, seems how those kids are the most targeted. And then I also provide training and education through art, through theater. I helped create a play that I came up with called Jane Doe in Wonderland that depicts Alice falling down the rabbit hole into another world after following the white rabbit who's a trafficker and then ends up in this different dimension. And the first purchaser is Tweedledum and Tweedledee, they're twins. And then the white queen is what we call the bottom, which is a very brainwashed victim. And this is a striking parallel. So we're going on our second tour at this point. And other than that, just how I ended up in this work was briefly, and I'm sure we'll touch on more of this throughout our time together, but just a very long story short, to give some relevance, 13 years ago, when I was 19, I was living in my hometown where I'm back at now, and this is in a county called Humboldt County. We're pretty infamous around the world for our marijuana, actually, and I was hanging around, normal 19-year-old to an extent, had experienced previous abuse, sexual abuse, amongst other abuses. However, I still had a pretty good head on my shoulders, but I wasn't on drugs. I wasn't wearing a short skirt when I met this guy or a low-cut shirt, so all those myths are out the door. And I just met this guy around town. I saw him quite a few different times, and then eventually he started talking to me, and after hanging out for a night, he left my area. He said he wasn't from here and he just came here to pick up marijuana. And that is not a red flag in my community. Everybody grows marijuana or sells marijuana. It's very much part of our culture. And then he left. He went back to his town, which is 5 hours away, which is Sacramento, California. And then after about a month of him calling me every day and wanting to know everything about me from, you know, where I grew up, my hopes and dreams, what I wanted to do when I got older, and then eventually working into wanting to know about how my uncle touched me, what did he look like, all these very particular things about my previous abusive life. And he put it off as therapy, which I very much fell for. After about a month of that, he asked me to go on a 3-day vacation to Sacramento. And eventually I agreed, and he came and he picked me up. Then he brought me back to Sacramento, and that first night was totally fine, and we were hanging out. His cousin showed up. He showed me his gun, which I was stoked to touch because I grew up always wanting to shoot a gun, and then we went to bed. But then the next morning I wake up, and that's where, as I put it, I fell down the rabbit hole into a world that I did not know existed until I was already in it. And there was this man standing over me, waking me up from a hangover, telling me that I need to get up and I need to get to work, that he is not who he said he was, that he's actually a pimp, and I'm going to be his, in better choice, word, prostitute, and that this is how prostitutes are made, and that we're a couple of blocks away from the track, which is where people are forced to work the streets, and that I need to get up and I need to go put these high heels on, which I'm 6 foot tall, never worn high heels in my life, and put on this little skimpy dress and go out on the streets. Long story short, I was in this room for quite a long time. Sun came up and went down. He came in, he would threaten my life. He would threaten the life of my 14-year-old sister back home. He said he had his friends sitting out in front of my mother's house, and they knew what party she was going to that night. I wouldn't get up off the floor even after that, but eventually he told me he had a pimp friend who had a brothel that I could work at. And so I thought on the way there, something was going to happen. Like, you know, I would do something in the car. I knew it was a longer trip, but we got into the car, and so did his cousin, and so did the gun. And then next thing I know, I'm in the car, and I realize that we're almost there, and nothing happened. The cops didn't come. I was too frozen to do anything. I was hyperventilating in the back seat. And then just pretty much next thing I know, I end up in a brothel, and the man standing in front of me was identical to my uncle, and that was no coincidence, which I did not know that then. But at that point, because I had been previously sexually abused, after that first appointment, I completely and totally was gone. I disassociated from my body immediately. And then next thing I know, I was trafficked throughout the Bay Area for 8 months of my life. And during this time, I was not on drugs, aside from a three-day stint when I told him I would leave about 4 months in on my birthday. He nearly killed me, and he dosed me with ecstasy for 3 days when he took my phones and took me to Nevada until I calmed down. I ran twice during this time. And during this time, I was in high-class hotels. I was in Hilton's. At worst, like Holiday Inns. I was advertised only online on escort sites, aside from a couple of days at the end of my trafficking experience. And I ended up going back to him after running the first time because of how I was treated by some women that I came in contact with, too much shame. And since then, after the 8 months, I escaped, and I've gone to testify against him in two different trials. The last one being in 2014 in my home county, where he kidnapped a 16-year-old girl. He raped her, and then he got charged with trafficking. There's four of us that testified out of the dozens of us that they found. And so he's in jail currently for human trafficking. He got convicted, and he'll be out in February 2018, however. But knowing that he got a 10-year sentence and would only serve half, I decided that I needed to do something and share with people what I know about this underground world, because if you know about it, you're a lot less likely to become a victim. So it's really long-winded, but that's how I ended up doing the work that I do now, is being a survivor. And we're basically the only people who truly know what that world is about. And I experience the world of the game, is what it's called. And so that's what I do. That's why I named my organization Game Over.
I like that. That's really good.
It's a really heart-wrenching story. Mm. I'm just so sorry that happened to you. That's just so wrong. You're obviously opening people's eyes to what's happening, you know, right in front of us, a world that we don't really know about, because we were talking about this before, that, you know, my impression was that human sex trafficking occurs in third world countries, not in countries like America. It's just horrendous.
And even for me, I had mentioned one of my first books. I've been a private investigator for 20 years in the U.S. court system or more. And I wrote a book called Abducted Dream several years ago, and I would do interviews, and I knew all the laws and all the statistics. And one woman on an AM radio station asked me about sex trafficking in the U.S. and if I thought that it was as big as it is in other countries. And I said, I don't think so, but I didn't know. And I was embarrassed by that. And when I looked into it, I was appalled. And of course, this has become more of a passion of mine now, and it's become bigger and bigger in the world with the refugee crisis all over the world. Human trafficking is bigger than ever. And one point I know you want to clarify, Elle, is that this has nothing to do with prostitution. Mm-hmm. It's not voluntary. There are no pimps. This is forced labor. It's forced sex trafficking. It's very different from this. That's how you're putting this across. Is that right?
So it's a little confusing and convoluted. And here's the issue, is that it's nearly impossible to tell if someone's being trafficked or if they're a willing prostitute or escort. I would have came off 120% to any law enforcement and all of my clients, aside from those 3 days I was on the street. I would have came off to every single one of them that I did not have a pimp at all. I was very much a sexually liberated college student. Nobody would have ever have guessed it unless they would have known my situation. And so that's part of the issue, is that how do you tell the difference? Because we're brainwashed and we will make you believe this. A lot of us, almost all of us, the one underlying major factor between all of us, no matter what socioeconomic class we come from, no matter what gender, almost all of us were previously sexually abused. Mm-hmm. So that's why we get targeted for a couple of reasons. We disassociate easy. And on top of that, we got told as kids, if you tell anyone what's happening, I'll kill your dog. Mm-hmm. Your mom will go to jail. I'll go to jail. I'll kill you. That's what I was told by my uncle. He said he would kill me. So I got really good at pretending like everything was okay. And so when we run into this issue of trying to differentiate between willing prostitution and somebody who's being trafficked, you can't tell the difference. They never would have been able to tell with me, aside from a couple of physical signs. But willing prostitution in America is someone who is over the age of 18. They can't be a minor. They're over the age of 18, and somebody else is, there's no one profiting from them. They are willing participants in their experience. They are the only ones who are getting profit from themselves trading their sexual services for something of monetary value. Now, that prostitution, that's prostitution, but sex trafficking is when there's a third party that is profiting off of someone else's sexual exploitation through force, fraud, or coercion.
So there's no coercion, there's no force, it's consensual, it's...
No one. Does that actually exist anywhere in the world? I mean, we know that in there's always a third party that is in control
that
and it's profiting.
That gets a bit difficult.
That does. And that's kind of where our conversation goes in the anti-trafficking movement, especially for those who are abolitionists, or what it's called, those who believe that you have to abolish prostitution. That's a belief of abolition. And then you have the pro-sex industry who believes that it should be allowed and everyone should be protected. So there's differing sides.
Well, even if there's no coercion and there's still a third party involved, then wouldn't that still constitute sexual exploitation to some degree?
So if there's someone who is over the age of 18 and someone else is profiting off of them without force, fraud, or coercion, that's technically legally considered pimping, which is really tricky because when somebody's walking around saying, I'm a pimp, they are a sex trafficker. Mm-hmm. The legal definition of pimp in America, at least, and I believe this is in a lot of places, is when somebody is like a boyfriend who has a girlfriend who is escorting. There's no domestic violence. He's not encouraging her to go to work, but yet he still doesn't have to pay his bills. Like, that would be like a legal sort of pimping situation. It's still illegal, but that would be technically what pimping is. But that's why it gets so confusing. But when you have prostitution, the person in America has to be over the age of 18, and there is no force, fraud, or coercion involved in their situation. Now, sex trafficking is, if you're over the age of 18, there's two things. There's minor sex trafficking and adult sex trafficking. Adult sex trafficking is, you're over the age of 18, someone's profiting from you, there has to be a third party, the trafficker, and then there has to be force, fraud, or coercion. Now, if someone under the age of 18, we no longer need a trafficker. There doesn't need to be a third party, and there doesn't need to be force, fraud, or coercion. So if the minor approaches, let's say a 16-year-old approaches a 25-year-old and says, hey, let me do this to you so I can stay at your house tonight. In America, that adult is now liable for sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. Now, when it's an adult, it's quite different. And so really tricky laws, but... I know that can get a little.
it's still such a gray area because at the age of 18, 19, you know, a person is very young and vulnerable. And if they've been sexually abused in the past, I mean, I know I work with young people and I work with adults, and the number of women who've been sexually abused, I would say almost every patient I have who suffers from some sort of emotional trauma and problem has been sexually abused. It is staggering. It is heart-wrenching.
And I want to mention something that you mentioned earlier, Al, before the show that we were talking about. Men, and I know this, I mean, I've been in this business as well for a long time, unfortunately, men get raped. And this is, I don't know about sex trafficking. You know more about the sex trafficking of men than I would, but that's, I'm not minimizing violence against women. It's a real big, huge problem globally, even in the United States and Australia. But I know that there are men who, they don't just get raped in prison, and it's not just gays that get raped or drug addicts. I know men that have gotten gang raped and they don't discuss it. It's not, anyhow, but you were talking about that to me earlier, and I agree with you. Men get raped quite often.
Yeah,
it's a huge, not just boys. It's a huge problem throughout the population.
Yes, males get trafficked, absolutely. And we find, right across the board for males or females, people that get involved in, like, let's say, pornography, you will find that the majority of them either or have been previously sexually abused. So then we have to ask, what is choice? Is that really a choice? Would you have chosen this path if you weren't previously able to disassociate from your body? And then there's also the idea of finances. Is it a choice if you're in poverty and you're a young male, you're 15 and you're on the streets and you were sexually abused at home, so you run away. And now some other guys are coming up to you and saying, hey, I can offer this to you so you can sleep on a couch tonight or you can have some food to eat. Is that a choice? No, that's not a choice. I mean, it's survival for a lot of folks. And so, again, that's the huge discussion, though. Like, I don't have the answers to this question. Unfortunately, I don't know how to fix it or how to direct it, really. But that is a very big topic amongst what is this world? And then, you know, how do you differentiate in between? So,
Elle, can you give us some statistics? How many people are trafficked? How many adolescents, how many adults?
So the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children works a lot with trafficking victims, and they actually estimated that in 2016, 1 in 5 runaways were likely sex trafficking victims. So we're not talking 1 in 5 kids that were kidnapped and missing. We're talking ones that actually ran away, which is always a term that I have an issue with, because they're running away. They're getting away from something. They're trying to save themselves usually from something. Kids don't tend to just leave shelter and food for no reason. It's very rare. So 1 in 5, and here's disturbing. It was 1 in 6 in 2015. It was 1 in 7 in 2014. And if you go all the way back to 2010, it was 1 in 10.
So it's actually increasing.
That's very disturbing.
And I can demonstrate, years ago I demonstrated to a woman how quickly you can find these sex traffickers and sex trafficked women. I went on Craigslist and I went to a certain section, this was several years ago before I came to Australia, and I found a man who was saying, come to my house for a private cheerleader tryout. We're looking for teenage girls to come for a private in-home tryout for the all-star cheerleading team. I said, that's a sex trafficker. And I've reported that to the Center of Missing and Exploited Children. And even now, I'm just now realizing, I often get contacted on Facebook by women looking for, you know, men. Those are probably sex trafficked women. And I think I had one just yesterday try to make a friend request to me. These are my, intuitively, I know what's going on. There's very little I can do about this. I don't know where they are. This would take a monumental effort of investigation, but it's not easy to, it's very easy to find them. It's not, it's very apparent.
Yeah.
It's not difficult.
Yeah, that's the issue. It's pretty easy to find folks, but how do you actually get a prosecution? I mean, I live in a small rural town. We have a population of about 30,000 people in my little town. And on our back page, which is where people are vastly advertised on at this point in time, it's just like Craigslist. They have an escort section that got shut down by Senate because they realized that since Backpage started in 2010, do you see that similarity to the 2010 statistic? Mm-hmm. Since it started in 2010 to now, child sex trafficking, minor sex trafficking in America has risen 843%.
Oh my goodness.
Against Backpage. They're up. They're actually, they're getting prosecuted. As we speak, the case is moving forward to a jury trial of these three CEOs that run this website because they made it like that. You can get a kid and sell them in 5 minutes, literally, anonymously. They made it so horrifically easy for kids to be sold online and adults. Like, let's remember, adults get trafficked too. I was 19. I was a 6 foot tall, smart 19-year-old, and this happened to me. So it's not just children, but those are the easier statistics we can derive, because if you're an adult, we can't tell if you're a trafficking victim unless you admit it legally. But with a child, if you were on Backpage, you're a trafficking victim. If you're an adult of 18, you're a trafficking victim. So it's a lot easier to grasp that number. But yeah, these sites, you can, in my little town, population of 30,000 people, there's nights where we have 80 women being advertised. And some of them are kids. 80. Mm-hmm. And this is all over. It's rare in our community because we have our marijuana industry, so that brings some stuff with it, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, look at San Francisco Backpage, and you'll find 250 people advertised, and they're covered in their pimps' brandings. They'll have words in their ads that will show that they're minors. It will show that they have bruises on them sometimes. I mean, it's obvious that they're trafficked. There's nights where it's like 90%. I could tell you, it says daddy, it says king, it says all of these code words that are used in the world of the game. And if not, well, there's a crown on her and initials on her chest. It's just like time and time and time again.
It's not hard to find it, that's for sure.
And what do you think is wrong with our society? Our society must be diseased. What is it? You know, who are the people that would try to purchase? Who are the purchasers? Are they being sexually abused as well, or are they just sort of sadistic
predators?
Well, there's a lot of controversy surrounding this subject when survivors speak on it. I have friends that had different experiences than me that believe that the vast majority of purchasers out there are extraordinarily sadistic and psychopathic, and they just want to hurt women, or they don't care about women. And I kind of teeter on this other line of that wasn't necessarily my experience. Mm-hmm. I also have a very different experience than a lot of people that I know. I was trafficked through escort sites, and these were expensive escort sites. I was never on like the Craigslist where the serial killers hang out. That's why it got shut down, the escort section, or Backpage, which wasn't up when I was being trafficked. But so I was in high class, like, and I'm not saying this to brag. Some people think that I was in what was considered a high class brothel. It was known for that when it got busted. In fact, it was very high paying clientele. And so I had longer term clientele where they would want to sit for like an hour. They'll pay for it to sit and talk at times. Don't get me wrong, there's the other ones as well. But I had an experience of the vast majority of men that I saw were like, you go to college, right? Like, I'm helping you support your way through college, right? You don't have a pimp, right? You don't have a trafficker. In fact, when he nearly killed me, he took me away for quite a few days because he left a bruise on my throat. Because if my clients would have seen that, they probably would have blacklisted me as somebody that had a pimp. Now, do a lot of them care for moral reasons? Like, I don't want to see her because I don't want to pay into her exploitation? Probably some of them. More of them will probably have an ego problem with paying somebody else money. So it's like, it's this mixture. But I think there's actually a good amount of men out there who are brainwashed as society is to believe that the women that are involved in this, if they're not on the streets, then they want to be there. And they're sexually liberated, healthy looking women. And so they'll pride themselves on, those are the only people that I see, are these healthy, young, vibrant women that have stuff to say. But the reality is, that's what the vast majority of us are, if not all of us. At some point in time, we all started off that way, usually. And so I think that needs to be addressed a bit, because the reality is that when we keep saying all these men are really sadistic and want to hurt women, then these other guys who are like going to college and think that they're just having fun, they don't relate to what I'm saying right now. But I am saying, no, it's you too. Like, you are the one that was purchasing me, and I was still being trafficked, and you never would have known. So I think it's really important to get that in there. No, it's not just a whole bunch of sadistic men who want to kill you. But that absolutely does happen. Do not get me wrong on that. But these men are from all different echelons. At this point, the kid that works at McDonald's could save for a month and purchase somebody for a half hour. Somebody on Social Security. I had a lot of politicians on my client list. Sacramento and DC are huge trafficking hubs for a reason, right? In our country, those are political hubs. You have lawyers, judges, doctors, officers.
That makes it all the more difficult.
Yeah,
I was going to say I had a one criminal, because I did so much criminal defense investigation. It was 50% of my work years ago. And there was a little town next to us where I lived. It was in this was actual prostitution, because one of the prostitutes was actually trying to get the pimp out of prison by hiring me to do videotape and catch the politicians and police officers that were going into this brothel. And, you know, so very, I'm not sure, but anyhow, I didn't want to get involved because that gets too complicated for me.
Trafficking. If there's a pimp anywhere, then I can pretty much guarantee you it's trafficking. They got some balls. I mean, law enforcement is clientele to a lot of these pimps, so they don't see a problem with going after them to use them. There's a lot of cases, if you look up, of pimps that actually try to bribe judges while they're being prosecuted. Mm-hmm. They're that brazen because they're used to it, and sometimes it works. I mean, the brothel that I was in, it got busted. There's an article about it, and it was across the street from the Concord police station when it got busted. You best believe those officers were, some of them, not all of them. There's a lot of wonderful law enforcement officers out there, but like every other profession, there's bad apples. Mm. And to use their power, they would come over on their lunch breaks. I had law enforcement that was clientele.
Yeah. I've had quite a few cases like that.
Yeah, and that they weren't abusive or acting crazy or anything. They seemed like normal people. They just go in their uniform, come to a brothel on their lunch break, which is very bizarre. And that's the other thing is when you talk about running, to who? Mm. Everyone's asked us, why don't you run? Why don't you run? I actually have an 8-hour class called Why Didn't I Run? Because that's the number one question. And this is part of the dynamics is the people that are running our society are the purchasers, usually. Mm. The ones with money. And so they're getting keys to the city after they just left your hotel room. You know what I mean? And so it's a very bizarre world to live in and to try and come out of.
I remember one particular case that I had. I was working for the defense attorney, and there was a 14-year-old girl, I believe she was 14 or 15, and she'd been driven around in a van with her controller. I don't know what you call him. We're not calling him a pimp anyhow.
Trafficker.
Doing sex acts in the van. And he got caught. I believe the prosecution probably had enough evidence. The defense attorney, just to keep in mind, defense attorneys don't necessarily always like their clients.
Right.
Very often I hear this. We don't like, you know, they don't like them. But they have their duty. This is the system. You don't just throw people in jail without going through the whole court process, due process. Anyhow, getting a little off track. So he sent me to, he wanted me to interview the 14-year-old girl who'd been sex trafficked, and she was in a group home now with social services. And the social worker, the case manager in charge, decided that she didn't want the 14-year-old girl to testify against the trafficker in court because it would be too traumatizing for her. So the case had to be dismissed. And this is why very often with defendants and people that get charged with crimes, even if they didn't do the crime, they're going to go to jail for it anyhow, because the prosecutors often know. You look at their criminal records and you see how many times they've gotten off on things in the past. They're going to get you on something no matter what, because they know you're guilty of something that you've gotten away with in the past. And that's the way the system seems to work. And it has a even though I worked in criminal defense investigation, I could sometimes see the other side of this, the prosecution and law enforcement side, because of the witness intimidation and everything else that goes on. It's very difficult to actually get people for the crimes that they commit, especially sex crimes.
Which is, that's exactly what we're realizing here. We only have like a 1-2% incarceration rate, I believe, of the cases that get brought forward of traffickers. It's extraordinarily rare. And then for my case, for example, to have four of us that willingly testified against him, that's insane. Like that is a rarity. And so what they realized is that, and that's what I train law enforcement on, is that you can't base these cases off of a victim-based investigation. If you're depending on us, we're going to run because our lives are seriously in danger. Our families' lives are very seriously in danger. We are dealing with complex PTSD. By the time the statutes of limitations has hit, you know, that's when we start healing. It takes about a decade. It took me a decade to finally come to terms with what happened to me. And so how are you going to have someone be a valid witness, especially when you start talking about how the brain functions during trauma bonding, Stockholm syndrome? If we're not completely indebted to our trafficker, as we feel, then we're in the state of not even being able to remember what happened to us because our amygdala can't release the memory until we are in out of fight or flight mode, which we're in constantly because we were stuck in that mode the whole entire time we were being trafficked. Our neurological pathways got stuck that way. So we have to retrain our brain by identifying our triggers and working through the healing process. And we don't receive services because we don't tell people what happened to us. So how are we going to end up going to trial, dealing with all of this stuff, sitting in front of a jury of strangers with all of their people intimidating you and telling the questions that I had to answer? How many people did you have sex with? Did you like it? I mean, things like...
That's right. That's what the lawyers will do.
Yeah. How much money did you make? It's all about presenting a different suspect. And so they're trying to turn me into that as I'm on the stand. I know about law. I studied it independently for years. That's the only reason I got through that trial. But I testified for 6 days. And that wasn't brutal. Even the case.
I'm sure it was brutal. Lawyers are brutal on both sides.
It was insane.
They pull out all the stops. They're very, they use intimidation tactics. They, like you said, did you enjoy it? I mean, that's right. They're allowed to do that. That's right. Yes.
And we had pretrial hearings, and in that, the jury's not there. And his people sat on my lawyer's side so that no matter where I looked, I was looking at him or his friends. They were screaming out in front of the courthouse. The DA's office said they'd never seen anything like it before. It was a massive amount of witness intimidation. And then the shame that comes with talking about this in front of people. And I mean, people don't understand the law. They don't understand the justice system and how it functions. We had a mistrial called out because one of the girls said that she was raped by her trafficker, which she was. So, I mean, it's very bizarre, and we don't trust anybody. So
no, it often has very little to do with law and evidence, because if they can humiliate you, they can win the case just based on shame and humiliation.
It's loopholes. One of the girls had a piercing, and the guy said, one of the jury members said he didn't believe her because she had a lip ring. I mean, it's bizarre. And so we're going through all this, and law enforcement started realizing we can't convict these guys off of this. So what are we going to go after them for? And they finally got the idea of going after them for racketeering. So now in America, when they look at traffickers, they look at them like Al Capone. So now they're going after things like they're trying to stack all these charges.
That's right.
Extortion. They're going after welfare fraud, which is huge.
That's right.
Pimp control type traffickers. They're going after them for trafficking, for drug trafficking, for firearms, all these things that like gangs would be involved.
Illegal income.
Yeah.
Taxable income, non-reportive taxable income, even if it's illegal income. They'll get you that like they did Al Capone. That's right. They'll find alternative ways. That's exactly why I told you. I used to see this all the time. If they catch someone on something and they can't get them on that one particular thing, the police will charge you with six other things because the prosecutor is going to get you on one of them. Even if it's not the thing they want to get you on, they're going to get you on something else, unrelated.
We'll try to go for a human trafficking charge. Sort of. If the victim doesn't prove credible to the jury, then they'll offer him a plea deal for lesser charges of all their other stuff compiled. So it's working out so far. But what really needs to happen is we need to create a supportive environment for survivors to come forward, to be able to talk about this. Because I'll tell you, as much hellacious as it was, almost worse than my whole experience together, my whole life, was this trial. Because before I could get out of my body, but with that, I had to be there for once. But it changed my life. I died on that stand, and I came back something else. And so I feel like we all deserve that. But it's very hard when we don't have the proper resources and care and therapy, financial assistance. Support from families and from the community to be educated enough on what's sitting in front of them in these jury trials. So once we create that environment, a lot more of us will come forward, which is extraordinarily important. So we can have that liberating experience of speaking into the microphone about what happened to us. So
Il, what needs to change, and what can others do to help all of this?
Well, there's a lot that needs to change. You know, there's a lot of different types of trafficking. In fact, Polaris Project, by the way, if you go on their site, they just did a typology. They found 25 different types of main trafficking that was reported to them last year. Mm-hmm. And in that, we have like familial type trafficking, which is very prevalent. So how do we address that? Because a lot of sex trafficking victims were sexually abused by their family when they were growing up. You know, they move to the pedophile rings that are trafficking children, whether it be ritualistic abuse, which it could be or not. A lot of that started off with previous abuse. Gang type trafficking starts out from people not being provided proper opportunities where they grow up, people being segregated, people not being able to go to school. And because of that, there's higher rates of domestic abuse and drug abuse, and then that leads to physical and sexual violence. And so I'm telling you, the vast majority of trafficking comes from pain. It comes from the hurt of the people before. And so how do we address that as humans? You raise the vibration by talking about it. You know, I'm with you on that. But I believe it's about communication, and I think that we need to be more open to listen to people that are perpetrators in some stances, so that we can start to understand why these things happen in the first place. Part of my saving when I was a teen, I came to terms with my abuse when I was a child because I started studying pedophiles. And I started realizing that there's a lot of studies out there that prove a lot of things that society doesn't know. About some people have gray matter in their brain, or they have brain damage and they end up doing this. A lot of people were previously sexually abused or physically abused growing up, and this is where it led to. And so if we start addressing those deeper issues, I think, and poverty, and, you know, women's helping women, lifting women up, providing more opportunities, I think we'll find a lot more movement. But in the immediate, I would say we need to go after the purchasers. We need to end demand, because there's actually an algorithm now that proves that they are the only underlying factor in sex trafficking. There can be sex trafficking and sexual exploitation without a trafficker. There can't be without a purchaser. It's impossible mathematically now. And so if we address that in the immediate, through education and prosecution and harsher penalties, mostly public shaming is the thing that has worked across the board. It's demolished demand by 80% in some areas. So
can you tell us about that? How? Because I think you've told us before about a whole program involving public shaming, and it sounds like it's quite effective.
Yeah. And when I went into this work, I heard of it and I was like, no, that's not right. But the more that I look at the statistics from the organization called Demand Abolition, mostly, then you start realizing that it does work. And there's other statistics out there. It's 82% of men. I don't remember exactly from which study, so I shouldn't be saying it, but the vast majority of men, they do say that they would not purchase sex if they thought that they would be held publicly accountable for it. And you find that when they start doing public shaming campaigns in areas, all of a sudden the ads on the websites start disappearing. Because the trafficker, it's not profitable for them to be in an area where the phone's not ringing. So they'll just move to the next town. Mm-hmm. And they're too scared to call when there's public shaming going on. A lot of them are. There's still about 20% that are going to make those phone calls because they're addicted, as they claim, or, you know, they're just psychopathic, who knows. But these guys will continue. But that's who... that's really who law enforcement should be concentrating on, the habitual offenders, in my opinion. But yeah, there's definitely, there's numbers to demolishing demand.
What about education through the school system?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if I would have been taught about the red flags of a pimp, I never would have been trafficked. Absolutely. He was exhibiting every single red flag. And
so what are those? Can you tell us about the red flags?
Yeah, he was very young. Well, not too young. He was in his 30s, but he looked real young. But he was older than 18, which they usually are. He had a really nice car. He drove a Jaguar. He had really nice things. He had rings, and he was dressed really nice. He was really smooth. That's the best way that I can describe him, is smooth. That's how law enforcement described him, too. And, you know, he admitted to being involved in drug trafficking, albeit marijuana, but still. He lived in a different city than me. He was always traveling. He had a disposable phone, like those Target sort of phones that you can buy for $25. We call them burner phones in America. They're usually used for drug dealing. He had admitted to previously being incarcerated. He called me every day for a month, even though he was an extraordinarily attractive young man that, you know, could have been with anybody, would have been playing a lot of girls back then. He called me every day, and he wanted to know everything about me. He wanted to know my hopes, my dreams, my vulnerabilities. And then most importantly, he asked me to go on a vacation. And usually for us, within 48 hours of being gone, that's when it happens. It happens very quick after you are out of your comfort zone and you have no more resources. So him showing me the gun that night, he was actually using terminology that's used in the game. I just didn't know what he was saying. I was just pretending like I did, trying to be cool. But I realized later that he was using terminology that is indicative to the game. And there's actually a lingo list, if anyone's curious and wants to check some of that out, on another survivor leader, phenomenal woman. She's in the forefront of the anti-trafficking movement. She's got a website called RebeccaBender.org. And under her human trafficking page, she actually has a human trafficking lingo sheet, as well as a brochure that gives red flags of who red flags of trafficking.
You might want to give your website as well to game over your organization.
Yeah, mine's not so spiffy right now. I'm in the middle of remodeling, but my website is itsgameover.org. So itsgameover.org. So lots of red flags there that if I would have known, it wouldn't have happened.
Can people donate on your site?
Yes. Yes. Do you have
How can people support Game Over?
Well, there's the donate page if they choose. As far as supporting me right now, I'm not currently able to take on any volunteers, but eventually I will be. So if anyone has any sort of special sort of skills in the next 6 months, then they can just contact me. And mostly I ask that people get educated. I mean, that's what I ask of people, is that wherever you are, find an anti-trafficking organization that has a survivor involved. Very important, on the board or survivor informed. I can travel to come to areas to train. A lot of us can, including Rebecca Bender. There's a speakers team that I'm actually on. So phenomenal survivor speaker team. They just get educated on what this looks like so that you, because once you start learning, you'll be able to identify it. And then those calls can be made and then cases can start and then people can start receiving advocacy and help as they need it. So.
And what can survivors do to recover spiritually? What did you do?
I went through a lot of ups and downs. It's recovering from complex PTSD is no fun, but really a lot of it was just kind of coming to terms with what had happened. Eventually, I had to address my drinking problem because we're almost all going to get some sort of way to cope with our trauma. And so I really started having to address that. I started meditation, does wonders, yoga, dancing, anything to get you back into your body, really coming to peace with your beliefs. While I was trying to get help, I kept running into walls because I kept running into only Christian-ran organizations, which I am not. And I had to address, is that because I felt like God wouldn't love me? Is that because I felt like I was a sinner? Because I did grow up Roman Catholic. Was it because I felt like I didn't belong in that world anymore? And once I came to terms with, no, that's just not what I believe, it was really hard for me to try and get assistance. But once I kind of did come to the determination of what I do believe, we all kind of find our God in our way, whatever that might be. And that was a huge help. Then you got to identify your triggers, which is very important. And eventually you gotta reach out. You gotta talk to somebody. This stuff does not go away. It's never gonna go away. It will fester and you will feel it. But as far as my beliefs, I just do wanna say that the vast majority of survivors that I know are Christian as well, which is wonderful. But I also want people to know that aren't, that there are holistic ways to find healing, and feel free to contact me and get deeper into that if they would like. But eventually I plan on that being an area that I start training on, is a more holistic sort of energy-based way of getting through it.
Okay.
Well, lots of information there, and it seems to me that one of the main factors is to get this out of the dark, to get people aware. The more we're aware, the more we can actually do.
Yeah, I mean, just on the show alone, I just realized, I'm thinking, the women that I'm being contacted on that are trying to make friend requests on Facebook and sending messages on Twitter saying, I'm looking for a guy, and those are sex trafficked women.
And they will,
should actually all be. But it's so constant. Everybody, and I think
as well, there's also those scam profiles that are just trying to get money out of folks.
True. Like, yep, that too. Yeah.
That's pretty frequent as well. But
I guess it's hard to tell. But I think a lot of the guys that probably get these requests are probably thinking, oh, these are just single prostitutes working out of their homes voluntarily, trying to make some extra money for college, like you were saying. And there's a whole mythical belief system that we've probably built up around these types of encounters, you know, these experiences and these things that come up. And it could be any number of things, but it's probably not what we think.
And I think what people need to be aware of, as a feminist, I feel very strongly about that, is most women would not go into any area like this. I mean, so many women have been sexually abused. I mean, it's not the path that a woman would want to choose. And certainly I'm, as a therapist, I'm very much aware of dissociation and all the trauma that occurs with victims of sexual abuse. And so it's not an area that women would choose. And so,
well, boys, I read about it. Everybody's probably heard of NAMBLA, and I'm not going to go into that, but there are entire organizations that sex traffic boys that will grow up to someday become sex traffickers of women or pedophiles or rapists, or I'm imagining.
Potentially. So, there's a lot of them that don't, luckily.
True.
Something I was afraid growing up, that I was going to be labeled as somebody who was going to end up being, like, you know, one way or the other. And so there's a lot of us that would never harm a soul. But unfortunately, if we're that empathic and we feel that much and we're still here after our torture, then we end up generating some sort of drug addiction as a way to get over or try to avoid the pain that's happened to us. So either way, it's unfortunate. But yes, absolutely. Get educated, get the word out. And by the way, there's a phenomenal documentary that's really documenting the struggle with Backpage and the Senate and these three minor sex trafficking victims that were trafficked off that website and their amazing parents trying to take down these sites. That's called I Am Jane Doe. And it's actually on Netflix. So anybody can watch it right now. And it's just one of the most phenomenal documentaries I've ever seen. Extraordinarily moving. And it really depicts the reality of what sex trafficking looks like today in somewhere that's not like a third world country. So.
Oh, no. And they're using the same, and I'm sure they use the same tactics, fear-based tactics, every criminal syndicate organization uses. I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to kill everyone in your family. I'm going to rape, torture, murder them. Every terrorist, mafia group, crime organization uses that tactic.
My life
across the board.
Frequently, but yes, absolutely. And there's a lot of us that we don't care what would happen to us, but we do care about what would happen to those that we love. So it's everything that you can imagine of horrific torture tactics. They follow prisoner of war tactics. And if a countries are susceptible to that and big, you know, burly army soldiers are susceptible to those torture tactics, why is it hard to believe that somebody that's young and has been abused and, you know, probably has some other stuff going on is not susceptible to the same tactics, right?
And that's because we know
books are made off of our torture tactics. These pimp have books that are literally written off of.
They've been proven to work, and they've worked for thousands of years, so they're going to continue to use them as long as they work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I hope you talking, I feel that you talking to us has really, really raised our awareness of this awful, awful, this awful reality. And we're very inspired by you setting up this organization.
Thank you for that.
It's just, you know, it takes a lot of courage to do what you're doing. I'm just gobsmacked by what you're doing, and it's very inspiring. And I hope that all together, if people raise awareness and perhaps if people are educated and if the law enforcement officers are educated and perhaps more laws are passed and if the purchasers are appropriately educated and maybe even shamed, I'm hoping that this will reduce in size.
Make a difference.
Because otherwise, what sort of a world are we living in? It's just...
Yeah, I'm certainly...
So I want to believe that this can change. But look, thank you very much for talking to us. Elle, you're one hell of a woman.
You are.
You really are.
Thank you for being our special guest on Universal Solo. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and I just have one more thing to say. Just let people know if they see something, they can report it no matter what country you're in. Polaris Project covers all countries. And you can call in America, at least it's 1-888-373-7888. Wherever you are, just Google National Human Trafficking Resource Center, which is also intertwined with Polaris. And so that number will pop up, and they have a huge database that covers the whole world. So please call them and see what services they can get. And they're also available for survivors to call and get services and advocacy.
Great resource.
Thank you so much, Elle White.
Thank you, Elle.
Yeah. Bye.
I'll be talking to you. Bye.
Well, this is Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
And Dr. Lana Love. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And we'll catch you next week.
See you next time. Bye for now.
Bye. Thank you, Elle.
Thanks.
Yeah, stay with me, everyone. That was excellent, really. I really enjoyed that. I've been saying this for a long time to friends and family about the seriousness of this. And even on and if anybody reads my posts, I'm on it. I mean, I hate child trafficking. I hate pedophilia. We should be rising up in our righteous ire and anger and creating an untouchable force that goes out and weeds these bastards from wherever they are, whatever crevice they're in or whatever open platform they're on. I truly believe in that. So I think that if you can't protect your children, your nation's screwed. And really, it comes down to that we got to protect our children. We got to protect it in every way imaginable. And we just haven't been very good at it because it seems a very large part of, let's say, government enforcement is, you know, a part of this. Believe it or not, in one way or another, blackmailed or a part of it or just knows about it and it hasn't remained silent for too long. But it's just such a difficult one to overcome, and it's got to be grassroots all the way. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to advertise your banner. You send it to me. We'll get your banner up. We'd like to help sponsor what you're doing a little bit. And that would be not just posting your banner, but send me a few commercials, and we'll blare them out. They'll run approximately 6 times per day each. And if you put together a few 30-second commercials, we'll blare them out for a while, like let's say 6 months.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Don. That would be wonderful.
Thank you for saying all that,
fantastic.
Too. I think if I said what was in my head right now, people would be horrified about what I think of the whole thing and what I would do, so I'm not going to say it because it wouldn't make me look too good. But I appreciate you expressing it for me in a nicer way, in a more constructive way, productive way.
Thank you for everything you're doing, Earl.
Thank you, Earl.
I can see you running for politics someday, actually.
Oh, God, I've heard that like 8 times.
Yeah, you should.
You're very intelligent, and your heart is in
you have a beautiful energy, a beautiful
really
aura
lovely
around
energy,
you,
yeah.
Your
yes.
eyes and your face and everything.
Thank you for doing this, and I'm so sorry for what you suffered. But may your life be wonderful, and may you achieve wonderful success with what you're doing, because the world needs that.
For sure, and I've certainly, I haven't had your experiences, but I've had enough of the experiences as a person involved that I know what goes on, and I don't need to know any more than what I know, because I'm already horrified by it, by my experiences with it, and the aftermath of it. You know, I've seen it enough. So,
bless you in your path. We'd love to have you on your show again at some stage, and good luck with everything.
If you guys get any responses as well, I would love to hear what happens. And be aware there might be some blowback from, I know that, I think prostitution is legalized in Australia, right?
I'm not sure.
I believe it is. So it should be interesting, the response. So please let me know, good or bad. I'd be curious.
It was a good show, though. It was very, you covered a lot of ground.
It was very informative.
I love blowback. You're not catching flack unless you're over the target. So, you know.
The better I do my job, the more people are going to want me dead.
That's the thing. But really, that means you're making a difference, difference.
You're on BBS Radio. These guys have had death threats that go on for half an hour long on their
Until we had to call the police and come.
Sure.
And they've even listened to the recordings like, God, this guy's insane. I'm like, exactly what I've been saying for 30 days. I've been trying to get this nutcase. It's happened to, you know, when it comes to our children, happening to our children. I mean, once you're an adult and I understand the trafficking, I get that it's rough. I know. But me, when it comes to children and not being able to protect the innocent in society, that just has no place in my mind.
Yeah.
And young people, I mean, at 18, 19, 20, you're so vulnerable.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm 33. Where I would have been when I was 19. Yeah. And again, we were, we abused as children. So you're right. It starts with the kids. So glad that was talked about. But all right.
I have to go because I've got a patient to see, but lovely talking to you.
Yeah, we may be in touch with you. We can do some collaborations around investigation training or something at some point.
That'd be wonderful.
Or intuitive psychic self-defense techniques, intuitive body language, nonverbal, all sorts of things that I've developed along the way.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting. And I'm also, attempting to become a private investigator eventually, so.
Okay, well, I can offer courses on that, too.
Yeah.
Time to do it.
Well, my you know, I love this. I want you to take my email address, contact@bbsradio.com, and you email me whatever banner you want posted and what link you want with it. Or if you just don't have a good enough banner, send us a few images. We'll get creative. And if you want to do some commercials, let's do 3 30-second commercials, or, you know, you never want a minute long, but between 30 seconds and a minute for each commercial. And, you know, we'll get you out there. But we'd have to have those commercials from you, or you can just call me up. Mm-hmm. And we can tape them very quickly, and I can put music to it. And we have agreements with a lot of bands, real hardened agreements that says we can use their music. And so we got kind of a nice, you know, arrangement of music we can choose from. You just tell me what genre you like to go with it. We'll make that happen, send you a couple versions of your commercials. And mm-hmm. you just say, okay, I like it, run with these two or these three or, you know, whatever.
Oh, thanks.
So I'll leave that in your hands. But
yeah, really appealing. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, these PBS Radio Network, they've got a much bigger audience than Universal Soul Love. He's got about 100 radio shows on here at least.
Oh,
so wow. Is that right? 100? How many radio shows do you have now?
Oh, yeah, it hums in there. We probably have over 90 live broadcasters and a lot of podcasters as well. Mm-hmm. Podcasters are doing their own thing without the live broadcast, but we're probably at around 92 shows weekly.
But this is
like that.
This is one of the biggest internet radio networks on the World Wide Web, isn't it?
You know, we believe that we are we've surpassed anybody else that does what we do. Yes, remote engineered internet talk radio. Yes,
we've been around long,
right? Since we've trademarked and registered BBS Radio and BBS. You know, which was the precursor to WWW. So we've been around quite a while. We love radio. We love media, but we've stayed highly independent, and we didn't have to. You know, we just chose to because, well, let's just say we both became quite spiritual people. We were kind of brought up Roman Catholic as well, let's say, and we became very spiritual in lieu of that. So. Yeah, but we, you know, my brother and I were never, you know, we never fell into any bad times in such a way as child traffickers or things like that. It's so horrific to me. I just can't get my grips mm-hmm. around because I got four kids. They're all teenagers, a 19-year-old who's going to be a cop and, mm-hmm. you know, almost 17-year-old that wants to be a surgeon. And my daughter, she's ballet 3 hours to 4 hours every day, 6 days a week for 10 years, right? She's like that kind of crazy. I love her. And then my youngest son, and they're such great kids. I've met kids that have had these issues. Mm-hmm. And it's just daunting to me that it can even go on because it affects everything about their life.
It does.
Everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad who I am today, but it's complete. I'm not the same person I was when I was 19. I'm much better now, but because I was one of the few that was able to get over the hump, you know, but the vast majority of us can't.
Right. So, crazy. Yeah. Well, maybe our mutual friend Alexandra would like to interview you.
Oh,
she's
she
lived
packs
back.
An
connection.
Audience. You want to get in with an audience from a lady that packs an audience. Really does. She's spectacular. She knows how to do her marketing. And
I'll
that's Alexandra. Right. Galactic Connection. David knows her well, yeah.
We've been trying to collaborate on anti-sex trafficking, actually, with a number of other organizations. It didn't work out too well, but still working with. It's galacticconnection.com. You'll see her. Right. You can't miss her.
You know, I wish we had more time to talk about more of the other stuff. So I'm hoping we can in the future.
Maybe we can do another one. Yeah.
I want to start getting into this community more so I can start reaching people that aren't Christian based and let them know like there are other ways to, you know.
Send me an email just send me a quick email with a list of things you want to talk about and we'll set up another interview. I'm sure Don wouldn't mind doing another Monday interview with us.
Anytime, because we can use our third station, which we haven't even used for talk radio. We have it set up to start another station. We just haven't used it except for pre-records because we have so many hosts that their guests can't meet the time that they want to do an interview, so we do a pre-record. Now it's become such a flavor, it takes our third station time up, which is kind of... But hey, no biggie. I mean, we just love being able to do that. So.
Yeah, Don's always been good about it. In fact, I didn't email him until last night about this interview because we're sort of... The way it is with us. I got to go because I know Lana's going to get to
work. You call me anytime, Dave. I'll pick up the phone. We pick up the phone around here.
Thanks so much. I love you. Love you both.
Love you all. I got it. Wow, my heart to both of you. You really, Al, gosh, great work. Great work. And become a private investigator.
Yeah, we can work that out. I can definitely train on that. That's I've got more than enough experience in so many different things in that area. I've trained quite a few people. It takes a while, but you know, it is worthwhile.
Yeah.
I've got a whole course set up on legal investigation for this anti-sex trafficking organization we were working with a while back. But maybe I'll show it to you.
Yeah. Anything. That's my stuff. So.
Glad somebody's doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad. I wish nobody had to do it, really. But
yeah. No.
Anyhow.
All right, guys. Okay. Well, it was excellent. Okay. Thank you so much. It's much appreciated.
All right. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thanks. Bye. You bet. Bye. Bye.